A smile played around the old man's mouth as he inclined his head. "Technically, yes," he repeated with a laugh. "You were always shrewd. Now you've blossomed into what our Father Mackay, who is a Scot, would call a very canny man." Gauntlet moved in the chair, making himself more comfortable, settling himself in the room, glancing around, taking in the books and the large, heavy crucifix that hung above the Father Superior's chair. "You believe it, then? This name is Diary? It adds up?" "Yes. Yes, if you'll officially vouch for Mr. Palfrey, I'll profess the writing's authentic." "Officially vouch for Kit? What the—" Aloud, he said, "You can be sure." "No, of course I can't be sure. There are inconsistencies. I don't understand why the thing's been preserved in the form of scrolls, but yes, yes, I'm as certain as any trained man can be. I'd attest to them being written during the early part of the first century. How were you always certain that people were lying to you while others told the truth? Kit Palfrey tells me you are very good indeed at putting people to the question." "That's different. They were there. The events were close. I could smell them. There was intuition." "Which is blind faith. My take on them, as young people would say nowadays, my take on the scrolls is 50% intuition and 50% forensic. The papyrus, the way it was made, the ink, and most of all the way the young, mute scribe, Naomi's amanuensis, wrote his Greek letters. He was very professional."
"Amanuensis?"
"Well, that's the correct term for the lad Petros, isn't it? An amanuensis is one who assists, takes dictation, helps prepare a text. From the Latin, amanu, one that is at hand."
"I suppose so. Convenient. A mute secretary, isn't it?"
"As convenient as a dumb waiter." Scott laughed, and out of his powers Charlie remembered that the man's laughs were infectious.
"For Christians, this would be a huge proof. Oh, just another couple of bricks. We have the proofs we need."
Scott made a swatting movement with his right hand. "People are revising dates all the time. Let me tell you something. At Magdalen College, Oxford, there are three small pieces of St. Matthew's Gospel. Experts used to date them from the second century. Now, it's suggested, and many scholars believe, they're really from early first century, the same as this manuscript. If that's true, then whoever wrote St. Matthew's Gospel was probably around when some of the reported things happened."
"The same with this?"
"Yes. But are they telling the truth? That'll be the next question. We can never satisfy everyone.
So, if you were a betting man,
which I'm not and never have been,
you'd put your money on Naomi the prostitute with a Roman officer who worked for, no, who was, the intelligence service."
"Yes, and young Petros, the dumb scribe, and Azeb, the Nubian girl. It's far more believable than the idiotic book that says that the Bible contains coded messages, prophecy about the Cold War, the Berlin Wall, and the Kennedy assassinations. People bought the thing by the boatload. I suppose they wanted to believe a fiction posing as fact. Personally, I found it rather obscene in the true meaning of the word. It reduced the holy book and put it on a par with the quatrains of Nostradamus." Gauntlet gave a non-committal grunt. "Yes. Gregory Scott fixed him with his eyes." Charlie turned back at him, recalling that the man's eyes could make you uncomfortable. "Yes. Well, you should also know everything this text is beginning to reveal. Let me tell you about Petros and his style." Gregory went on to describe the characteristic Hechenstil, the hooked style, because of the hooks, the Hechen, that characterize the way in which the Greek letters were written. "The hooks are usually an indication of an early period when dating papyri. He also explained that it had been necessary for the two scholarly translators to decipher occasional lapses into tachygraphy by Petros. The young man had obviously been well trained, for tachygraphy is the name given to several different types of shorthand in use across the Roman Empire in its ancient days. Charlie, how much of Naomi's diary have you read?"
Gregory Scott finally asked. "Only the first couple of pages. The girl's description of how she came to be on the game—" "I'm sorry, Father."
"Don't be. On the game is perfectly acceptable. Why shouldn't it be? You're a priest. So?
So, well, I was going to ask the people who are doing the translation. Is it Father Harry and Father Hugh? Yes. They're monks, yes. They've taken vows. Poverty, chastity, and obedience, yes? Of course. Holy men? What do you mean by holy, Charlie? Men set apart, dedicated to God? What's the problem? They're translating these texts by a prostitute. This Naomi, she talks much about sex. This woman, she's mad about sex. That's natural, it's her job. But Charlie squirmed. These two men, the monks, priests. He crossed his mind that possibly he was being very naive. They're also two of the world's best scholars when it comes to biblical Greek and Latin. Yes, but what the woman is describing, you call that, how do you say it? You call this mortal sin, yes? I worry that the Father Superior smiled. My dear brother Charlie, I think I see what you're getting at. May I say that I'm touched by your sense of, how can I say it? Or? Gregory leaned across the desk, put out an arm, and touched Gauntlet's right shoulder. You're being very protective, concerned that in reading the woman's innermost thoughts she might corrupt my brothers in Christ. I suppose that's what I'm getting at, yes. The sins of the flesh, Charlie, they're not the worst sins. Sometimes I think that people imagine fornication and adultery to be the most besetting of all sins. They are serious, but there are worse things. Oh, and I am certain that they pose difficulties to Father Hugh and Harry. They cause me problems at the age of 75. For in the sere and yellow part of my life, the autumnal years, I still experience difficulties. The imagination can be a wild and furious thing. Charlie bumbled again, searching for the right words. There's a great altercation in my mind when it comes to the Bible and, well, sexual explicitness. You ever wonder how all these folk begat other folk? The Bible's full of sexual innuendo. It contains more lust, murder, rape, and desire than most modern blockbusters. Not where Jesus is concerned. You think Jesus, as a man, was a prude? How can I tell? I don't know, but it makes me... What's the right word? Uncomfortable? Uncomfortable and somewhat caring. Monks know the score, I promise you. Yes, but I wouldn't like to think that we were leading them into mortal sin. Let the scholars look after their own souls. It's between them and God. I have a much greater concern. Yes? Indeed, yes. Let us grant that this document is genuine, that it is written by a woman called Naomi, who was a whore employed by the officer Amilius, head of a Roman intelligence-gathering unit. I have read more of these diaries than you have. I am much more concerned about this Naomi's IQ, her intellectual capacity, her acumen, and her motives. You see, the very fact that she reduces so many of her thoughts into purely sexual imagery is, in a way, suspect. I feel that she has very limited intelligence, so possibly has less insight. She may not realize the full extent to which she is being used. You mean we should be wary of what she says? Very. But I only speak with a little more knowledge than yourself. We should read more. Scott rose from behind the desk, striding toward the door, with his habit flapping around his ankles, making a rippling noise. Shall we go and see how the translators progress? Let you read more? There are some shocks and surprises in store, I can tell you that already. And Naomi allows herself to be dominated by the Roman officer, doesn't she? Scott tugged at the door, surprising the porter, Brother Simon, who had been standing a little close, even with his ear pressed against it. For he leaped back, his face confirming his guilt. Ah, Brother Simon, you've heard enough. I've spoken to you about this before. The harsh edge of the priest's voice stung like a slap, and Charlie saw him for a moment as he had been back in the early 50s in the DP camp. Gregory Scott's voice cracked again, biting the air. Come, lead the way to the study room being used by Fathers Hugh and Harry. The three of them marched in brisk pace, through passages and cloisters, until they reached a light, airy room near the large library. White walls, and no decorations except for a 5-foot crucifix high on the far wall. Two of the walls were taken up with big computer screens, printers, scanners, and other hardware. Light flooded down from large overhead gantries, and Charlie must have looked surprised, for a tall, florid-faced, muscular monk strode over and put out a hand. "You must be Charlie Gauntlet." His voice sounded perpetually amused. "And yes, we've been dragged, kicking and screaming, into the 21st century. I'm Father Hugh. This is Father Harry." The other monk was equally tall, with the face of a man who was once good-looking, but had been devoured by the world. Father Hugh's eyes were those of a man rapidly growing tired after years of poring over books and documents. They sat with Kit Palfrey at a plain oak table, and it was Palfrey who looked up from loose pages of the translation and whispered in some reverence, "Charles, this is incredible, right from the heart. We're reading the thoughts of one who touched Jesus. Read, please, read." Kit passed a handful of pages to old Gauntlet, who took them, sank into a chair, and began to read.